All right. The third segment of the decade is the first national person, well-known celebrity I have ever interviewed, and he's in Rhode Island, comes from Hope Valley, Rhode Island. A lot of people loved it. Huge response in the country, people who love country. Billy Gilman interview. Of course, every Labor Day you can find him on the Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethon. He always helps out Jerry Lewis. And he played, I don't know if you could Google this, he was on the Michael Jackson special back in 2001 when Michael Jackson came out with Invincible. Was that album Invincible, I think, Tyrell, right? Michael Jackson came out with that album back in 2001, and Billy Gilman was on that singing the song... Dan, I think. I think that's the song. But anyway, you can Google it, okay? But here's a Billy Gilman interview.
Here's Billy Gilman on Lose Yourself with the Derek Shapiro
Billy
Show.
Billy Gilman!
All right, now on Lose Yourself with the Derek Shapiro Show here on www.derekshapiroshow.com here on White Noise Radio. We're up to Billy Gilman from Hope Valley, Rhode Island. Hello, Billy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Derek. How are you?
Good, thank you. So, Billy, where are you calling me from today?
I'm calling from my house in Hope Valley, actually. Yep.
Awesome.
Actually, I get a little time off, so we're home.
That's awesome. How often do you get time off?
Well, it depends. Right now, I have to probably about a week, and then we head out to Las Vegas to do a couple shows and some stuff.
Really?
But usually, it ranges from, it could be anywhere from a week, or 2 weeks in a month, or it could be 3 days in a month, or it could be 3 months.
Wow.
But right now, it's pretty busy, so...
So when you go to Vegas, where do you usually stay?
It depends. This time we're staying at the Mandalay Bay.
Wow, awesome. Now tell me, you were 11 when you came out with your first hit, you know, One Voice, right?
Yes, I was 100 octaves higher, and I could see where people could get very high.
Yep. And the youngest performer to hit the Billboard Country Charts. Tell me about that feeling, about being the youngest performer to do, you know, to experience that, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, so what was that feeling like?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You know, what was that feeling like being so young to experience to be the youngest performer on the Billboard Country Charts?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. At that point, I really didn't, you know because I was so young. I mean, it was an honor, don't get me wrong, but I really didn't, like, take it in as much as I do now and see what happened at that point in my career and how it happened, you know, quite fast, not overnight, but it was quite fast.
Sure.
So it's very, very, very cool, and still to this day that attribute is still, you know, liable. It's still there, which is pretty neat. No one has beat me as being the youngest. I think they would have to be in diapers still to beat it.
Just like my son is, actually. But now you took time off, you know, before coming out with your latest CD, self-titled Billy Gilman, right?
That's right.
Due to your voice changing, how hard was it to, get back to what you love after that hiatus?
Coming back after that hiatus, it was really scary because there were points where I stopped singing because of the voice change. You know, it's very common, you know, us guys go through it all the time. It's no big deal.
Yep.
People made it into a big deal. They said I did something to wreck my voice. I was reading in the headlines like the Inquirer or something, Golden Voice Lost Forever or something like that. It was wild. And I was like, no, it really wasn't. And we almost made a statement to the press to say that it isn't. It's just Mother Nature, you know. It's just taking its course from growing up.
Sure.
And finally, it took 2.5 years. I still sang a little bit. I was doing stuff with MDA, the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
Yep.
But I really wasn't making records, performing in concerts, because I couldn't. I would have literally damaged it. And then they would have a field day writing that.
Yep.
So finally, when one day I was just doing something, and I started to just hum or sing or something. I think it was in my studio, actually. And all of a sudden, it felt different. My voice felt different. It felt like it was back. I can't describe the feeling. It just felt like it didn't sound like that yet. You know what I mean? And finally, it sounded strong enough where maybe I could start rebuilding it.
Yeah.
So I went to Angela, who was my manager and my vocal coach, firstly.
Sure.
And I sang a little bit for her. I did my warm-up scales, and she said, yeah, I can tell it. It's there again. We can start working on it. So we took a year. Within the two and a half years, we took a whole year to really redevelop it, because it's new sounds, it's new low notes, it's new high notes, not very high, you know, not and very low. You know, there's a whole different aspect and a whole different technique to learn. So it took a while, but finally now, with the release of the newest record, it was a relief, number one, for people to hear me, hear the new Billy Gilman, and for me, mentally, because what a hell it was, you know, trying to shoot the critics down and saying, no, it wasn't because of me, it was because of other things, you know what I mean? And to finally be able to say that in a big way, it was awesome.
Right. And what's it like for you to grow up in this business? How can you sum it up?
Crazy.
Crazy?
It's crazy in so many aspects, because your life is a roller coaster, music business is a roller coaster. You know, there's a line in a song I just heard from one of my good friends, Martin McBride. He sings a song, it's called Anyway. And it's about if you build something and the next day it's torn down, build it anyway. And there's a part in that song and it says, you can sing a song with all your heart, and tomorrow they'll forget you even sang it, but sing it anyway. And that is so true, the music business.
Right.
You can sing one song one day and they're like, oh, who's that the next day? You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's a constant battle for any artist, whether they're number one right now or number one for 3 weeks, or the number 20 artist, to keep your name out there and to keep it fresh, to keep all eyes on you. You know, it's really tough to keep that, to keep topping yourself, you know?
Right.
And then there's another aspect where you see so many of your friends get hurt, or you see so many of your friends go down a wrong path or something. You know, it's musical friends. It's amazing, this business. But there are many, you know, great things about it, too. You know, you meet wonderful people.
Sure.
You get all kinds of fans, and they appreciate the message you send, and it's pretty cool. It's almost like a pros and cons type of thing. Yep. With anything, I'm sure.
Sure. And before we get to One Voice, your first hit, how do you think that you have grown from an artist from when you were 11 to now, and how has your fans taken the transition as well?
Well, you know, it's really neat because a lot of my fans, most of my fans, grew up with me at that point. You know, they all stayed on, and I never thought they would. I really didn't, because I mean, I like singers, but the type of singers I like, they've been around for forever. They know they're not going anywhere.
Right.
People knew I was going to drop out because my voice was going to change. People knew I was going to have to take that hiatus.
Right.
But people could have liked me, and then a couple, you know, years later when I was going through that voice change, said goodbye, okay, we're going to move out to another singer that we like, another young singer or whatever.
Sure.
Because there's plenty out there. But they stayed with me, you know, thousands and thousands, all my fans. It's really neat, and through the message boards and all that, they sent me get well wishes when I was going through that time, and, you know, keep your chin up, you'll be back, when I never thought I would be.
Yeah.
So they really grew up with me, and I've gotten many more because now my music is being taken more seriously.
That's
as
good.
A god artist, because as a kid of my age, 10, 11 years old, how could you sing about liking a girl?
Yeah.
How can you sing that and relate to it? You're too young. You know what I mean? You're really weird, maybe, but you know. So it was tough to get songs that fit that timeline. And now, since I'm growing up, 18, 19 years old, I can relate to a lot more. Not everything, but I can relate to a lot more, and it's becoming more believable. So more adult fans are coming on. So it's climbing, which is great to know.
Sure, sure. Well, no, I did have a few girls I liked back when I was 10 and 11 years old, too.
Oh, yeah, of course you liked them. I had some, too. I mean, I had the biggest crush on me and Ryan. She was awful. And when I first met her, I almost dropped my mouth. You know what I mean? And my mouth was to the floor. You know, so I liked them, but when you have a relationship, the songs of the relationship.
Exactly, exactly.
That's too old, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But we are back here on Lose Yourself with the Derek Shapiro Show. Here on White Noise Radio, here on www.DerekShapiroShow.com with Billy Gilman again. And Billy, tell me about your favorite place to perform and why.
Well, I think any country singer, they like the epitome of performance halls, concerts, rooms, theaters, whatever you call it, would be not Carnegie Hall, that's Pop Singers.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going in that direction. is the Grand Ole Opry. That is it for stingers. When you arrive at the Grand Ole Opry, you know you've done something. And that place is just amazing. You know, they have an original piece of the Opry floor that all the greats stood. It was that one piece, and they still have it there. You know, all the rest of the theater stage is renovated, except that one little circle where they all stood. And when you stand there, just before you go to sing, and the microphone is right there on a stand, it's like, you know, man, the shoes that have stood here, I don't think I'm grateful to stand here.
Sure.
But it's really, really overwhelming to be there. But just to sing, I love Foxwoods around because it's my hometown, number one. Mohegan Sun, I love Mohegan Sun. I'm going there in May.
Awesome.
So, you know, because it's number one, it's my hometown. My family can come. Because so many times they can't, because I'm, you know, all over the place. And so it's a great, you know, homecoming type of thing. So anytime I get to sing around my hometown area, I'm ready.
Well, awesome. And also, you're also well known again for contributing each year for the Labor Day with Jerry Lewis and his telethon. Tell me a little bit about your friendship that you did have with Maddie.
Well, it was on Larry King. That's when it started. I was on Larry King, and I sang, and the other segment was Maddie Stepanek, and I'd never heard of him before.
Right.
And that night I found out that he wrote some great poems, and I heard these poems, and I said, you know, this was a few years after One Voice came out, and I said to myself, man, these poems could be put to music, this world, you know? They're too good not to be heard. You can read them, yes, but putting them to music in some form would add a whole other dimension to these great, you know, lyric poems. They weren't even poems. They were very lyric-oriented. And so we called his, you know, writing company and his people, and we pitched the idea. And believe it or not, many artists before me asked. But he didn't like the artist, but he didn't feel they could portray the message right. And so we shot him some demos of his poems put to music, and he loved the idea. And we made a record with Sony Music, Music Through Heart Songs. And a percentage of that went to the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
Wow.
So when we were promoting that, Maddie had a gala of just his poems. And that night, whatever was raised went to the Muscular Dystrophy Association. So there was a representative there that night from MDA. And they came up to me and said, we love your CD and we want you to be our new youth chairman. It's right under Jerry Lewis, you know. They were almost like, he's conning me into doing it, bribing me. But of course, you know, I love giving back because I've been given so much. Yes, of course, I said yes, and that's been 5 years now, so...
Sure.
Ever since then, I've been going all around the nation talking to kids and adults about the diseases, and it's just great because I meet so many, you know, wonderful people that are, you know, inflicted with these diseases, and to see their courage and their drive that they have every day to get up, and maybe not have the use of their legs, or have the use of their lungs, you know, a muscle, whatever the muscle is that they're, you know, losing... Yet they don't care. They're happy. They're excited to meet you. They're excited to get out there and, you know, get better. And it's just, it's amazing. It really is.
Sure. And also you had the opportunity to perform at Caesar's Palace for Celine Dion back in Vegas, right? And at the Michael Jackson special back in 2001. I have a videotaped actually that special. And tell me about those experiences and how did it shape your music career?
Well, it really opened my eyes to different types of music. When I was 3 years old, when I first comprehended that I had a different voice from other kids or other people, I could mimic sounds from a record, I could hold notes, I could do this and that. That's what I knew. That was the turning point for me at 3, can you believe it? Usually it's 20 for some people. Oh, no, 3. And then from that point on, it was all country music because that's what was around my house.
Sure.
Eddie Arnold, Patsy Cline, Pam Tillis. Those people were shaped who I was at that point. And then when I got into the music business and when I was with Angela, I met Angela first at 8 years old, and she really formed who I was, you know, my stage show, the songs I put in it, and it was all country. You know, I had a 10-gallon cowboy hat. It was bigger than I was, literally. And then... when I got closer to Angela and her family, they listen to big band. They listen to popular music, Sinatra, Streisand, all that. And I went, that's interesting.
Sure.
You know, because I'd never heard it before. It was a whole new thing. And then throughout my professional career, when I was with Michael Jackson and all those great artists and Celine, it just is amazing to see the orchestrations of the music. I've never done that. I go out with a six-piece band, a steel guitar, a fiddle, and you are, you know, going. Then I go and I see these people with 40 musicians, 50 musicians, strings, horns, a band leader. You know, that's a whole other island, and I just love that. And from that point on, I've done a lot of symphony shows, orchestra shows, because I love that. So whether or not that may be a new path that I may go down in the near future, you know, it's really coming back to this style of music. Tony Bennett just released a duets record, and it was number one and just so popular, and Michael Bublé and all these great, you know, jazz, popular singer standards. Singers are coming back, so who knows?
Sure, sure. And it's funny that you mentioned Michael Bublé, because my artist Rola, who I manage, Rola loves Michael Bublé too, you know what I'm saying? And she loves singing his songs around the house, you know what I'm saying? So it's awesome, you know, Michael Bublé. But last but not least, you also have an MDA event coming out. Tell me about that event.
Yes. For the past 5 years, like I said, I've been with them, and I've never had a hometown show. I said, how ridiculous is this? Usually a person that's involved with a charity has something in their hometown. And so we formed a musical night of song. And Angela performs. She was, I'm sure this is in Rhode Island, people will know. This originates in Rhode Island, I should say.
Really?
People will know that she, you know, was a singer for 30 years and had a number one hit. And so she's very popular in Rhode Island. And so I asked her if she could sing with us.
Really?
And we're trying to get Jenny, who is Maddie's mom, the poem's mother, to come up and do a speech, as well as Angela's grandson, who was on Broadway 3 times with Tom Selleck and Carol Burnett. So it's just a different night. It's a night of different styles of music, me being country, them being popular music. So it's very, very fun. We have a 12-piece band and silent auction, and it's great, and I host it. I hate hosting because I can sing better than I can speak. I don't like to speak, you know.
Sure.
And MDA, it revolves around public speaking. So this is it's a task that, you know, hurts me every time because it's more of a stage fright thing. So it's fun. It really is. It's a neat task to overcome.
And where does the MDA thing take place?
As to my knowledge, it's April 21st.
Okay.
That's Saturday, yes, April 21st of this year.
And where can we find this?
You can call the MDA headquarters in Rhode Island, the local MDA office. I don't know their number offhand, but you contact them, or you can go to MDAUSA.org, and they will direct you to the right page.
Oh, okay, great. So, again, your website is billygelman.com.
Yes.
And you have a MySpace as well.
I don't know anything about it, though. So fans would think I comment or whatever it's called, blog or whatever. I don't. It's my website made it up, along with my fans. They control it.
Oh, they do. Okay.
A core group of fans that really has become like press agents for the MySpace thing. They're unbelievable. I can't believe it.
Yes.
So, yes, I have a MySpace, an official one.
Yes.
But I don't know anything about it, so I know I have one, though. I'm very technology retarded, so
Hey, by the way, do you know where the Blue Moon restaurant is in Westerly, Rhode Island?
The what?
The Blue Moon restaurant in Westerly, Rhode Island. The Blue Moon restaurant. Well, May 4th, right? A Blue Moon restaurant. Rollers performing. You should come down there, you know what I'm saying? I should meet you in person sometime, you know?
Where is it?
May 4th, right? At 10 p.m. Rollers performing down there, right?
Yes. I'll write that down, definitely.
Yes. And by the way, for you being on my show, okay, I heard from Angela, okay, your manager, that Gaetano's is your favorite restaurant. Is that true?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, because that's your favorite restaurant, for you being on my show, you're so grateful for being on my show today, okay? Gaetano's Restaurant Cafe, okay? Gaetano's Cafe on 62 Franklin Street in Westerly, Rhode Island, has given you a $50 gift certificate, okay, for you to eat there. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, I wanted to. I want to show my appreciation because, you know, for all my past guests who've been on here, well, like Tony Petracco in the past and Walt Buteau from Channel 12 and Mark Searles from ABC 6 News and Frank Coletta from NBC 10, I want to do the same thing for you, Billy, because, you know, you are a celebrity, you're a star, you know what I'm saying? And I want to do the same thing for you. And thank you for, you know, calling in my show today. And, you know, it's been a great pleasure interviewing you today, you know?
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. It's the hometown crowd that means the most because, you know, without you guys, you know, being the backbone of my career, any artist with their hometown, you know, I appreciate that. And that's why I made this a musical out of song to, you know, say thank you to my hometown and do an off-the-cuff show rather than a huge elaborate show at, say, a Foxwoods or a Mohegan and just do a nice cabaret club type of show. It's very off-the-cuff and very hometown-esque, you know, it's not anything fancy, it's just my appreciation to them, and sure. By you guys, by all of you coming, you know, the public, you're saying thank you to me as well, because you're giving money to this great cause, so, you know, thank you for being my hometown, too, because yes. I appreciate that more than you know.
Yes, and I want to be hearing, and by the way, when's your show in Mohegan again, May what?
I think it's May 9th and 10th.
Okay, because I'm going to come to that. And
awesome.
Yes, in addition to that, and what? Tell me about this song we're going to be playing, the next song, I Will.
I Will is possibly the next single, though we're debating whether that is the one or not, but I Will is a great, great song. When I heard it, you know, I instantly knew it was going to be something special, and people have dubbed it the wedding song of the year, so it is a love song, and like I said, I can relate to them now, so, but it's a great ballad, and ballads are what I love to sing, so...
Well,
that,
that's awesome. All right, that was a Billy Gilman interview. And the number third song, take it away, Seamstress.
The third song is The Way It Should Be by Boy Gatorade.
Yes, it is. Here it is. And the number two song for the decade of 2005 to 2009.
Said I don't know you apart or any different, but I will stand up for what's right. You said I don't love you. How did we ever get this far? We will never know what's right. And there's always something I will know remains. That love
All right, the second segment of the decade is this actor who is in the movie Rain Over Me. He played Adam Sandler's father-in-law in this movie. Of course, he was on the episode Sisters with Celia Ward back in the day. And I taped this in Lincoln, Rhode Island at Twin River Casino. And Robert Klein, comedian actor Robert Klein, and here's how this went.
Okay, we got Lose Yourself with the Derek Shapiro Show with the great actor, comedian Robert Klein here on Lose Yourself with the Derek Shapiro Show. And thank you for letting me interview you tonight.
Derek, you have beautiful children. What is your wife's name?
Rola.
You and Rola have beautiful children. I'm looking at them here. Absolutely beautiful. He looks like Barack Obama.
Thank you.
Barack Hussein Ali Akbar. Obama. Just a regular man.
Let me ask you a question. You go on the road a lot, you know, you're taping for your new HBO special.
I'm writing material, like I go into these small clubs. Is this a Radio Shack tape recorder mini?
Yes, it is.
Jesus, come on, man. I have a $100 device here. It's digital. Get with it.
Well, I bought it for Hanukkah, actually.
First of all, this Radio Shack device was made by a child in Mumbai, tied to a machine. You have to have a little conscience here.
What do you think about going on tour?
Stealing the soap from the hotels, Derek.
That's mine, too.
Now, I don't go on the road much anymore. This is a wonderful little period of time in which I go back to my roots. Cabaret, a nightclub where they serve drinks and maybe food, like I started in Second City in 1965. When I want to write stuff, I go to the small clubs. I can't write it on my lucrative, what do they call them, corporate gigs. You know, I did the colonoscopy song for 2,000 gastroenterologists at Turner Field, Atlanta. Big money and all, that's not the place. I improvise a little, that's not the place to write my new stuff. So I go to the clubs, and I've been in Nashville and Boston and Atlanta and Cleveland and Monticello, New York, and just, you know. And I'm continuing. That's how I write the new repertoire. I've done 8 HBO specials.
Wow.
They're out on a DVD set, a 4-DVD set, very cheap at Amazon.com, like $32-$33. It's a life of comedy from 1975 to 2005. I'm working on number 9 now for late next year. Yeah, there it is on tape, my whole career, right.
And now from doing like everything from radio to TV, movie, stand-up, what do you enjoy most of it about
Rola? I used to be very cute, really? You know, when I was young.
Really?
The girls used to have an eye.
Really?
Yes. And so in this set, you see me go from embryonic to geezer in one set.
So from doing stand-up to movies to television show, what's your favorite and why?
Stand-up comedy is my bread and butter. I write the stuff. I direct it pretty much. Bob Stein produces my HBO specials, the last 3. He'll produce this one. I'm sort of creatively isolated. I think of stuff and do it for audiences. And I don't look much about me. I love show business, but when the meter's off, I like to do other things and think of other things. I mean, just do nothing even. Doing it, been in show business 42 years.
So what do you like to do when you do nothing?
To finish your answer, I like movies, I always have, but even that, the thrill is off.
Sure.
After 40 movies or so, but it's fun. Theater is the one thing I would avoid now. It's just too strenuous. I do not want to show up 8 times a week to do the same thing over and over again. It's like the old Italian deli where each sandwich is made by hand. And each time the show has to be done by hand. Now, there's something everyone loves about live performance, like my stand-up comedy or when you sing in front of a live audience. But it's one thing I've done. You know, I've been on Broadway a number of times. I've been... That's the one thing I would sort of push aside. I have a book, The Amherst Busboy of Decatur Avenue, Simon & Schuster, and they would like me to do another one.
Would you?
Of course, I'd love to. The news hasn't hit me yet on the second book. If first one was about my life, age 9 to 25 in the Bronx. I got good notices. It's real literature. It's not...
Now, would you do music too? Because, of course, I was listening to you sing. I love your voice.
Yes, you have a great sense, great voice too when you sing.
Certainly I can hide behind being a comedian. Thank you very much for the compliment. For a comedian, I certainly say, well, I love to do music in my work. Always have. I'm musical. Bob Stein was the perfect match for me. He's been with me for 24 years. I've had only four accompanists in 40 years. He is the most complete Eastman School of Music because I do symphony orchestra gigs.
Now, any routine comedy, I mean, you mentioned a lot of actors you work with. Any favorite actor and actress that you work with and why?
Burt Reynolds was so much fun, and Hooper, he was really cool. Before all that crap happened to him, he was terrific. I loved working with Adam Sandler and Don Cheadle.
Oh, and Rain Over Me.
I was just in another movie called Iron Abbey. It's also an excellent movie with Jason Alexander, Fred Willard, great people. Pacino, I worked with him in a movie called People I Know. It was intense. I knew him personally.
Sure.
And he's a great guy, and it was wonderful working with him. I worked with Glenn Close in a film in Canada. Some heavyweights, dramatic greats. And each of them were awed by my performance.
Is it tough doing a more dramatic role or comedic role?
What?
Is it difficult doing a comedic role or a dramatic role more?
Hey, man, comedy. That's the difficult one, baby.
Well, I want to thank you for losing yourself with the Derek Shapiro Show here. And I want to thank you again, Robert Klein, for letting me interview you today.
Yeah, beautiful, too.
Yes.
Thank you, Derek and Royla.
Rola.
Yes. Rola, I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine.
It's an unusual name. This is Robert Klein, and I believe you are losing yourself with the Derek Shapiro Show. You may be losing a good deal more. Who knows? Derek, come.
Of course, that was the second segment of the decade, and the second song, Seamstress. It is right now. I'll leave this out of the Derek Shapiro Show.
I grab it like a trophy. The feeling so near, it's happening. Stay forward. Day by day, I cruise the road. Screaming fans, R-O-L-L-A. Nothing more so beautiful. Now I'ma have it all. Do you feel it now? Do you feel it back? Do you feel it, hun? I'm coming. Do you feel it in? Do you feel it out? Do you feel it right? I'm coming. Do you feel it?
Down when you play them drums. this play, I have a story. Do you think, girl? Yeah, yeah. Oh, oh. Do you feel it now? Do you feel it right? Do you feel it, honey? I'm coming. Do you feel it in? Do you feel it out? Do you feel it right? I'm coming.
I'm coming.
Do you feel it?
All right, we're up to the number one segment. And this one segment was only about, what, maybe about a 20-second interview? And sometimes my shortest interviews are the best. Well, you rated it. You voted it. Here it is, T.I. for the number one segment of the decade.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yo, what are you planning to do for the holidays?
Man, spending with my family. As usual.
Exactly.
Right, rapper T.I., of course, and the number one song, Seamstress.
On the ride back home, I see this girl sitting all alone. She asked if I had a cell phone. I said yes, so she couldn't make a phone call. On the bus ride, she started to cry, saying that she didn't know how to. But I saw she was lost in telling her biz, and no one really paid attention to her. Alone in the cold, staring at the floor, eyes moving all around because she's lost. A needful stare for care, so she talks out loud and doesn't care.
All right, here it is, right now.
Feeling came over me inside.
All right, and that's it. For Lose Yourself at the Derek Shapiro Show, I do thank everybody for joining me. Seamstress on the show. I do thank Rola for helping me out. I do thank, of course, Wycliffe John. I do thank Denise, Classic Consignments. I do thank, of course, Wheezy, of course, Club Texano. I want to thank, I want to thank Tyrell, of course. Thank you. Give a round of applause to him, of course. I want to thank the listeners and listeners out there who support the show, Lose Yourself at the Derek Shapiro Show, all the sponsors out there. On my next show.
All right, well, I do thank the Seamstress
for helping me out today.
And
hopefully you can come to the studio next time and enjoy the hair show, okay?
My 5-year anniversary show.
Thank you for being on here.
Take
it easy. And we have Bye-bye. Kid in Play on my next show. And we do have NBC 11 from here in Atlanta, news reporter. I forget his name. So I'm sorry about that in advance. But we do have him on my next show. Until my next show, you take it easy. Have a great few weeks. Bye-bye.